drifting lies all my life, and I've been living here for a long, long time, and I know it's been coming down a while now.
You're listening to The Kunstler Cast, an audio program about the tragic comedy of suburban sprawl. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Each week, I bring you another conversation with James Howard Kunstler, author of The Geography of Nowhere and The Long Emergency. Today's topic, the end of oil, small cities and towns.
Jim, thank you for joining us for another installment of The Kunstler Cast.
It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Duncan.
I just finished reading The Long Emergency and I want to talk with you about it. But first, for our listeners, can you give a brief synopsis of what The Long Emergency is about?
Well, yeah, it's really about how we are heading into a period of resource scarcity and the depletion of our oil supplies and the disruption, long before we run out of oil, the disruption of the oil markets and the allocation of this crucial resource all around the world and the geopolitical implications of those inequities. Mm-hmm. And how these problems are going to combine with climate change and, you know, in so many ways relating to everything from how we produce our food, you know, how food is distributed around the world.
The end of the 7,000-mile Caesar salad, as you said.
Yeah, you know, how we're going to have trade and manufacturing when Walmart dies.
Yeah.
And not least, you know, what the destiny of the suburban, car-dependent, happy motoring living arrangement is, which is, you know, probably for me, the biggest part of the equation.
Yeah. I mean, if I were to sum it up, I'd say we're going to run out of oil. We've always known this. A lot of alternative fuels are sort of fantasy. We've just been living with reckless abandon up to this point, just ignoring the inevitable future. It's coming. It's going to happen. Whether it pans out exactly the way you envision it, you know, it's yet to be seen, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. My version is only one plausible future.
Yeah.
And even its plausibility may be arguable, of course.
Okay. So some of your critics on the internets I've been reading, one thing in common they all say is that they think you're looking forward to this almost like as payback to all these idiots, you know, who've been driving SUVs around and, you know, living in McMansions. I mean, are you looking forward to this?
Well, I don't feel vengeful about it like, you know, some character out of a Tony Soprano drama trying to whack his adversaries, you know. The way I feel about it is that we've got a manner of life that produces a tremendous amount of discomfort, distress, unhappiness, anxiety, depression, hardship, violence.
Yeah.
And that when circumstances compel us to live differently, we're going to benefit hugely from making these changes.
Yeah.
And from getting away from a lot of the habits and practices that we've been engaged in.
Okay, so you're not a fundamentalist new urbanist who's waiting for the apocalypse to bring about the end of suburbia, but you do think that...
Well, I'm not a Luddite. I am a new urbanist, and I am in pretty thoroughgoing agreement with their principles.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not trying to destroy American society.
Right.
If anything, you know, they were among the reformers who had the most comprehensive and kindest vision of a possible positive outcome.
Yeah.
For the set of changes we're heading into.
What about your critics? This I read more about The Geography of Nowhere, but what about your critics who accused you of extreme nostalgia, you know, for a life, you know, before the car? How do you address that?
The word nostalgia itself is interesting because it literally means homesickness. And it became evident to me that, you know, part of the whole suburban dilemma is that I think as a culture, as a nation, as a people, we are tremendously homesick, but not just for a box that we call, quote, a home, but for a real dwelling place for our society and for our communities that is worth caring about. Mm. The chief characteristic of just about everything we built in suburbia was that it ended up being stuff that wasn't worth caring about.
Yeah.
And that had tremendous cultural implications for us.
In reading your book, I wanted to ask you, have you sort of given up on new urbanism to an extent? Have you sort of given up on putting the effort to curb sprawl? Because reading your book, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was almost feeling like these systems are going to run out of steam anyway. So why even bother? Just want to sit back and get a good seat for the show.
Well, exactly. You know, it will be self-evident that we cannot continue this for many reasons, not just for energy reasons. We're also going to be running into severe limitations with the increment of finance that's available to build any more of this.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is we're not going to be building any more of a living arrangement that has no future, because it will be self-evidently an exercise in futility. I haven't given up on the new urbanism at all, but I do regard their stock and trade of the last 15 years, the traditional neighborhood development, running about 400 acres built out in a cornfield or a cow pasture. I don't think we're going to see much more of that for a number of reasons. The new urbanists in recent years, they became hostages of the production home building industry. And they hitched themselves to the methods and practices and financing increments of that industry. And the production home builders are now crapping out. They're going down. I don't think that the kind of finance for projects that large is going to be available in the future too, because there's going to be a hell of a lot less capital for investment in this kind of thing. We're not going to build new developments of any kind in the cow pastures and meadows and cornfields, because we're going to need the ag land in any case. That kind of work that was done by the new urbanists will be viewed in hindsight as a transitional, sort of transformational kind of mode of development. The real achievement of the new urbanists was not building the projects like Seaside, et cetera. It was diving into the garbage can of history and retrieving that important principle and methodology for understanding how to design and assemble real towns and real cities. And I think that it will now be applied to the existing small cities and towns in places like Troy, and it's already happening in Saratoga. And increasingly, that'll be the case. The increment of development will be smaller. Instead of doing these 400-acre, new town projects, we'll be lucky if we can do a new intersection or a new corner in a town or a new, block. Mm. Or for that matter, one or two really good building lots on a block.
I got to say, though, to me, this sounds, it might sound very dark to some people. To me, it sounds overly optimistic. I feel like you're being overly optimistic in the American people. Aren't they going to be building malls and cul-de-sacs right until the very end, the very last drop of
oil? Yeah, I think that
oil?
We're doing that now. It is the very end of that. One of the things that we are seeing just now, in the winter of 2008, is that a commercial real estate crash is following the implosion of the residential real estate crash. And, it makes sense because, in essence, the commercial stuff always follows in sequence the residential development. Mm-hmm. And so now you're seeing, huge problems with the strip malls and office parks and big box power centers that were permitted way back in 2005, 2006. They are now running into enormous financing problems. Their customers are losing their disposable income as they're, as they lose their jobs and their, their incomes go down and they get into troubles. The whole equation of commercial building is changing very quickly and drastically. Mm-hmm. I think that we're going to be in serious trouble in 5 years. There's no question that we're going to be running into trouble with the oil export crisis, which is a new layer of market instability on top of the general depletion picture.
Now, I own a car, I drive a car, but I don't make 11 trips a day, in my car. I like having a car if I want to drive it. Mm-hmm. But I am looking forward. I felt myself kind of looking forward to some parts of this future you envision. A return to the local, better transportation ideas. One of the reasons why I moved to Troy, New York is I spotted it, as a nice, livable, small, manageable city. And I could have sort of the benefits of a, an urban neighborhood, but I can walk out into the country fairly easy. Mm-hmm. But people laugh at me for living in Troy, New York. They're out in the suburbs. I feel like once the long emergency starts, places like Troy will be perfectly suited for the new future. Am I a crank or what?
Well, Troy's an interesting case because it was so neglected for so long that it actually retained a tremendous amount of very valuable pre-automobile dependent fabric. Great
yeah.
neighborhoods, composed of really sturdy brownstone row houses.
They left about 75% of the city standing,
and
the, which is a lot for these days, right?
You bet, because, you know, for example, Columbus, Ohio, you know, 75% of Columbus, Ohio is surface parking.
Wow.
You know, that's, and that's not unusual. But Troy had just a tremendous amount of great buildings. In fact, the part of the old downtown was so wonderful that, you know, Martin Scorsese went up there in the 1990s and used it as a set for his movie, The Age of Innocence.
Yeah,
these places are coming back.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that they will is that in the future, we're going to have human urban habitats that have a meaningful relationship with productive ag land outside of the city that's not 3,000 miles away. You know, we're going to have to grow a certain amount of our own food closer to home. In short, what had either already become suburbs or was slated to become more suburbs, that whole relationship is going to come to an end.
Yeah.
I happen to believe that the suburban project in the larger sense is coming to an end.
Yeah.
You know, the collapse of the housing bubble is viewed by a lot of people as just another part of a down cycle in an endless set of repeating cycles. But I think, in fact, this is the end of all those cycles, and we're simply not going to be doing it anymore.
So just for the benefit of our listeners, I wanted to describe really briefly, Troy is a small city. It's got, it was built for probably 75,000. Now it's about 45,000 residents. It's pretty dense, you know, urban structure, but only about five blocks deep, situated on the Hudson River. So you have access to waterways, an extensive system of waterways. And, you know, there is some sprawl outside of town, but I don't know, the hilly geography or something has prevented your typical sprawl tumors that bubble up on the outside of town. So I'm sure there's tons of other cities, small cities around the country, you know, situated in a similar spot.
You'd be surprised how, in many ways, different they are and how different their circumstances are. There are some things that are fairly uniform, you know. Just about every town in America has its mall, has its asteroid belt of suburban commercial crap outside. But, you know, Troy is an especially interesting case because its economy died so completely after about 1960, and there's simply a lot of that suburban stuff just didn't happen on the outskirts.
Well, you also, in The Long Emergency, you kind of go through the different regions of the country and you predict, you foresee their future. And Troy being in the Northeast, you think the Northeast is going to do pretty well after the end of cheap oil, except for the megapolis from Boston to Baltimore, right?
Well, yeah, I gave some thought to these things, and it seemed to me that the places that had brighter prospects were the places that were near water, you know, water for different purposes, drinking water, certainly, and water for households, but also the possibility of water power, generating electricity on a modest scale, and water transport, which I think is going to become a much bigger thing again. And of course, Troy is in the Hudson River estuary, which is, you know, one of the great, truly great waterways of our country. I also said that the Sun Belt was going to be troubled going into the future, and that there was going to be an inverse relationship to the degree that it prospered in the late 20th century, and that to the degree that it has tremendous trouble going forward now.
Let me just clarify: the Sun Belt you're talking about on the West Coast.
Actually, there are really sort of two Sun Belts. There's the Wet Sun Belt, which is the Southeast, Atlanta, basically from the Atlantic Ocean to Dallas.
Yeah.
And then there's the Dry Sun Belt, which is, you know, everything west of that to the Pacific Ocean. Yeah. And that includes, you know, Phoenix and Tucson and Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Both of those regions are going to be in a lot of trouble, but not exactly for the same reasons.
So do you have any recommendations for a young guy like me? Where should I stay put in Troy, or what should I do?
I have a very different view of what's going to be happening to the big cities than many other commentators. I think that the big cities are going to be contracting substantially, and in probably a pretty disorderly way. They're going to be, you know, they're going to enter insolvency, bankruptcy, difficulty in maintaining services. It's going to be pretty gnarly in the big metroplexes of America. You know, personally, I think that the small cities and small towns are going to tend to be the more successful areas. Mm-hmm. And that young people ought to be very careful about choosing the places that they go. Part of that whole decision will be, you know, a regional decision. Do I move to Phoenix, Arizona, or do I move to, you know, to the Northeast or to the upper Midwest? I think that places that are around water, places that have good ag land, places that have small cities that exist at a scale that can be rebuilt are all going to have advantages. You know, the upper Midwest now is a basket case, but it's also, you know, the center of the Great Lakes, which is the greatest inland, freshwater inland sea in the world and has tremendous possibilities, at least for maritime trade on a regional basis. These are things that we're not thinking about at all yet, but they're going to come to play a much larger role in our society.
All right. Well, Jim, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure to be here with you.
You've been listening to the Kunstler Cast featuring James Howard Kunstler. To leave a listener comment, call toll-free at 866-924-9499. Send email to letters@kunstlercast.com. You can download episodes of this program and read transcripts at kunstlercast.com. I'm your host, Duncan Crary. Thanks for listening.